All right, we're in Azure world again. It's been a while. Who are you?
Hi, I'm Doug Hauger. I'm general manager for Windows Azure, running the business and marketing aspects of bringing the Windows Azure platform to the marketplace.
Excellent. So now in July, like mid-July, you guys announced a new business model. Can we just refresh us what that was all about?
Yeah, so in July at the Worldwide Partner Conference, which was prior to our global summit for our sales and marketing folks, we announced essentially the commercial availability for the Windows Azure platform in November. Okay. And so that means that Windows Azure, SQL Azure, the .NET services will be available for developers to actually be building commercial products on. It's currently available now, and then we'll start billing people in November. So we have this period of about 5 months, 6 months, where people can actually be building on it for free,
okay.
And then in November we'll start charging people.
Excellent. So take us through real quickly, I mean, how does the billing model work? Clearly there's going to be, you know, the amount of data being pushed down a pipe, and there's going to be sort of the number of nodes that I have and the complexity of my services.
Right.
How do you rationalize it? How does it work?
Yeah, so there's really, there's four components that we'll bill on, and then there's three ways that we'll bill. And the main thing that we heard from businesses and developers and everybody, they said, please make it simple. Just give it to me so that I don't have to have a, you know, a dictionary and a PhD to understand how it works. And so we essentially said, look, we're going to bill people on the compute hours that they have and use and consume. We're going to bill them on the bandwidth. We're going to bill them on storage. And then we'll bill them on a set of activities or transactions. Mm-hmm. And every transaction is considered the same. In other words, a read or a write to a database or a authentication to a authentication engine will all be the same, and we'll charge all the same for those four things, essentially, or the buckets we charge on. Then we're going to essentially have three different ways that we'll bill people. They can pay as they go. So it's kind of the accepted industry norm right now for cloud computing services. You use an hour, you pay for an hour. So we can pay as they go. Second thing is they can actually subscribe to a set of services, like our top-tier MSDN offering, where they get access to the Windows Azure platform as part of that offering. And then the third thing we're doing is integrating into our volume licensing structure that we have as Microsoft. So if you have an enterprise agreement, you're a developer that falls under an agreement that's with your company, you can get access to the platform as part of that agreement.
Excellent. So that is definitely very simple. Which is good.
I hope it is.
Well, I mean, it's simpler than, say, our licensing models of the past.
Yeah.
So that's really good news.
Yeah. We try to learn from the past.
So in the case of, I mean, it's just interesting because the cloud is sort of this distributed, well, cloud. And, yeah. You know, you don't really know as a business owner, particularly like, you know, the smaller startups, how successful you're going to be. So how do you sort of rationalize, okay, I mean, pay as you go, but all of a sudden, wow, we just created a Facebook, man. We need some money. We need to revolutionize our model. Yeah. How does that work? I mean, when people come to you and talk about that concern?
It's a concern that people have, right? If you're two people in a garage, right? It's a typical example people give, right? You start building something. You don't know if you're going to be the next Facebook or the next Twitter or whatever it is. And how do you make sure that when that happens, that you have some predictability about what you're going to pay and that you can afford it, right? That's the main thing. There's a couple things we're doing is we're bringing out a set of tools that allows people to model what the cost of the service will be as it scales up. So you do have some predictability. In addition, when we go out to the marketplace, we'll have these subscription things like the MSDN, but also long-term subscription commitments where people can say, oh, if I do become the next Facebook and I know that I need a certain amount of capacity over time, you can commit to 6 months or a year or more than a year of resource utilization and get a significant discount.
Okay.
So in that way, we give you the tools to figure out what it's going to cost, and we give you an ability to get a discount based upon your commitment when you know what your workload is.
Mm. So. And I think something that would be interesting to talk about, I mean, and since you were so heavily involved with all of this, figuring out this problem,
yeah.
And it's like all of our, you know, our competitors and partners have the same problem in this space. I mean, people have been trained for everything being free on the internet, right? Who pays for email subscriptions these days?
Right.
Or pretty much anything. Sometimes the news websites are trying to make some money, but that's an interesting problem because for just the small sort of developer, I own a little pizza shop or whatever, and I want to kind of upload my menu and have just not have to worry about it. I don't understand how that stuff works, for example.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to pay too much money for that. So how, is there sort of like a continuum of professional cloud services for the enterprise versus, you know, simple stuff for the normal humans that want access to power?
The normal cloud. Humans. Yeah. Yeah, well, one of the things that we've done, and you're right, you talk about, you know, sort of how there's the hobbyist or the small business owner or a single developer that wants to just pay for some, or play with something and not have to pay for it or not pay a lot. We have a commitment from Microsoft that people can get on board and play with the platform and even do fairly simple stuff for free or for very low cost. And this is where there's essentially an always free offering, where you can come up, you can play with it, you can see how things work, you can even get some low-level usage. And then as you ramp up over time, you can start paying more and getting more services for it. Now, you mentioned you know, the sort of the enterprise-class services and how does that scale and what do people pay for that. The one thing that we've done is we said, look, we want to bring an enterprise-class platform but make it available to small business and to the single developer. I had a lot of feedback from enterprise customers when we were going through the business model saying, oh, look, why don't you charge us more and give us a better platform? And I said, you know what? I don't think that the startup guys want a less good platform, a worse platform to develop on. They just don't want to have to pay as much for it. So what we've done is really try to structure it where there's a ramp up, you can get it always free, you can pay a little bit of money and get access when you need it. And then if you want enterprise class, you still get enterprise class if you're small, or you can pay more and get more resources at a high level.
Interesting. So, I mean, take us through a little bit. I mean, when you think about Microsoft, this is a very different business model for us. Yeah. How do you, how, I mean, and you've been here. What's your story? How long have you been here? I mean, you,
so I'm into my 11th year now with Microsoft. So
all right.
I've been here for a little while.
So yeah. are you sort of the, you know, the 90s style, you know, package software world. Was it a big mental shift for you to think about the, you know, wow, cloud computing and the way that things are changing? And I mean, this is a stretch for Microsoft in some sense.
Well, I think it, you know, people say it's a stretch, and what's been surprising for me is that I don't think it's really that much of a stretch if you look at our core competence. Our core competence is bringing software value to customers, right? We're a great software company. We innovate on software. And the fact is that how we deliver that to customers, it should just be the customer's choice. They should be able to get choice if they want to get it as a packaged product. They should have a choice to get it as a service. They should be able to download it and then install it themselves. They should subscribe to it. So it's really how they get it is their choice. And now, if you get your mind around, as you know, as a Microsoft employee, if you get your mind around the fact that we innovate on software and how that gets delivered shouldn't be a gating factor for us. That should just be the customer's choice. Then it all makes sense, right? If instead you're focused on, oh, I got to go sell a box to somebody, then it doesn't make sense. And I think the you know, company with Ray Ozzie's leadership and other folks has been pretty clear that we want to leave the choice in the customer's hands. And you know, developers' hands as to how they want to get the tools, how they want to subscribe to services or buy them. And so that shift, I think, I've gone through that. I think it makes it a lot easier to then think about business models and think about monetization and think about essentially the voice of the customer and the developer and the partner.
Absolutely. And it's one of the things that's interesting when you think about this whole, you know, it's basically a thin client revolution coming back with, you know, some company down in California announcing basically a thin client operating system. Do you have any kind of concerns about focusing too much of our attention on the cloud and not focusing on enough on the client? I mean, that's not really what we're doing, but I'm just saying, well, from a business perspective.
Yeah, not really. And the reason being is that customers and partners and developers that I've talked to in the last year as I've been formulating the thinking on this business model have been very clear that they really don't want just thin client. That they, you know, sort of the comment about choice and how do we deliver software, they want a choice because they know they need sometimes a heavy, robust, scalable client on the desktop that can do rich things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they need access on a mobile device. Sometimes they need access to just cloud services through a thin client. And the fact is, I think that we have a fairly good focus across the board, especially with the strategy that we now have around three screens in a cloud. When you think about, you got your client, you got your TV, and you got your phone, mm-hmm. and all of those things should be conduits to the persona and the services and the value that the customer wants to get. And so as a developer, if you can think about, how am I going to make sure that I leverage the benefits of a PC, a phone, a television, in the way I develop my software, and leverage the services in the cloud, that to me is the future. And so I think as a company, you know, we have assets in all that space, and we understand developers who are trying to develop in that space. And so I think we're fairly well balanced.
Now, you have some like ridiculous engineering talent on this team. I mean, beginning with Dave Cutler and then a host of the other programming geniuses you have here. How, I mean, when you're constructing your business model, it's happening essentially in parallel with the ability for this system in the cloud to support. I mean, a great thing would be if this was a really successful thing and lots of people use Azure.
Yep.
So that, of course, means it needs to scale, it needs to work, it needs to be reliable, and all the things we have to deal with always in a general purpose operating system environment.
Yep.
How do you think about that? How does it, I mean, how do you work with the engineering team in general?
Well, one of the things I feel incredibly fortunate about in this role is, in working for Amitabh Srivastava, who manages the Windows Azure team overall, mm-hmm. he's been really clear with the engineering guys that they should be focusing on building things that the business team thinks customers and partners and developers in the community want. And so we have a very good process now where we have a tight integration between the business side and the engineering side. And we've got a planning process. And in that planning process, one of the main things we do is go out and solicit input from our community, from the people building stuff on the platform. And we're actually in a cycle right now where we're getting feedback and we're putting that into the engineering planning life cycle and planning what's going to come out after PDC, because we have our big sort of commercial launch of PDC this year. Mm. So that's some determining what's going to come out after PDC. Excellent. One of the cool things is that since it's a service, you can actually slipstream things in very quickly and make them available. As an example, we went out last PDC and announced our community technology preview on Windows Azure. Mm-hmm. And we got a lot of feedback right away. People said, yeah, it's a great platform, but it's really focused on .NET and it's fairly restricted service models and it's, you know, around a it's good, but it's a set of things that I would like to see some more features around. Mm-hmm. And so they said one of the things was you need to bring support for other languages. So we immediately went to work, built that functionality into the platform, and by Mix, which was in March last year, we were able to actually get integrated in support for PHP, for Python, for Ruby. We've got Java run on the platform. You know, so there's within a 4 or 5 month period, you can get all these features in that developers tell you they want without having to wait for another ship vehicle like a shrink wrap package product.
Awesome. That's an excellent point, because that definitely is the power of cloud computing that we don't focus on enough.
Exactly.
You guys are going to be able to iterate really quickly based on customer needs that maybe the customers don't even know about yet.
Yep.
So that's really cool.
Yep.
I like that. Now, one last question.
Mm-hmm.
You made this announcement in July. Here we are in August. And so I'm just curious, what have customers in sort of the range, what kind of feedback have they given you when they've seen these numbers and these ideas and the business model?
Yeah. Yeah, the feedback actually has been surprisingly good. And when I say surprisingly, sometimes I'm a pessimist and I want to be conservative about what we think or what I think and how I think it's going to go. After WPC, and we now saw the business model, the numbers, enterprise customers, developers, startups, and partners have all come back and said, this is great. We're ready to go onto the platform.
Cool.
They've come in and given feedback and said, hey, you need to expand some features, and there's always work to do, so we're not perfect yet by any means. But the feedback's been very good. And we have a range of customers from startups, from small businesses, ISVs, significant ISVs starting to architect on the platform, their next version of their product around software as a service built on Windows Azure, and then enterprise customers building as well. that we'll have as sample customers at our Professional Developers Conference.
Excellent. We'll have to talk to them. I hope you're chiming on.
Absolutely.
Hey, great to meet you. I mean, this is great work.
Thank you. Thanks for coming over. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. I love this building. It's cool. It's in the clouds.
It's in the clouds.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.